Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Dave Morrow. Dave is a Canadian military veteran and host of the Hard to Kill podcast. He's, I think, the second or third Canadian I've had on the show. So we'll be talking a lot about fitness and how you can also become hard to kill. And we'll probably be making fun of each other's accents a bit too, and some other jokes that we'll be throwing each other's way. So welcome to the show, Dave. I'm glad to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure to hop on and a fellow podcasters, veteran Army podcasters podcast. And like I was saying, it's always good to be on the other end of the podcast just to kind of mix it up. If for me, it's a lot easier in the sense that like less prep. I can just talk about me.
Yeah. So I guess that's the focus of this right now. It's you. We're talking about you and kind of flipping the script for the host of a podcast. It's sometimes a little bit different being on the other end of the mic and getting the questions thrown at you, but it's kind of cool. I've done it a number of times. I've been on your podcast as well. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. For the listeners, go check that episode out. But we do this all the time. We swap podcasts and it's really a cool thing to do. So, for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So like you said, I am a retired member of the Canadian Armed Forces. I was a reservist in the infantry here, and I always need to explain a little bit about our structure here in Canada. It's a little bit different than reserves in the States. We have regiments based off the old school British system, and I was literally part of a unit that like wore this stuff. But this is me in wood form. If you're familiar with the changing of the guard in the UK, my unit was the Canadian version of that, the Canadian Grenadier Guards. So it couldn't be any more stereotypical British. And that's what I did for 15 years. I did a lot of stuff ceremonially in Ottawa. We do changing of the guard. We do like the palace guard, if you want to call it. So we are there at the Governor General's residence. We do sentry shifts, stuff like that. Our claim to fame was we were Canada's number two tourist attraction, number one being Niagara Falls. So we're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to compete with that. I mean,
yeah. Niagara Falls is pretty beautiful. Being second to that isn't so bad.
Right.
But we're also an infantry unit. And when Afghanistan kicked off, and for us, it was like 2003, we started sending guys. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was 2003. Probably we started sending guys overseas around there. And I realized, oh crap, this is a war. 9/11 happened right after I joined. I did my basic training that summer. And then I remember when the towers came down, I was playing football and I went out to practice and we didn't have the internet. Well, we did, but nobody had it like readily accessible. You had to go to like the computer lab if you wanted to get online. It took 20 minutes. But everybody was, well, my buddies were like, dude, you're going to war. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, dude, you're in the army, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, did you see what happened on TV? I was like, no. They're like, bro, get ready. And I was freaking out. Anyways, 10 years later, I'm finally in Afghanistan. And I had the honor of being deployed actually with the 171 Cav of the 10th Mountain Division.
Okay.
So I spent the majority of my tour with them in Dan District. And then slowly but surely after that, my career kind of came to an end in the sense that I was already a teacher by trade. So I was a high school math and science teacher. Because in the reserves, you can go do your school and then train in the summer and then pick and choose what you want to do. So I chose to go overseas in 2010. And then when I came back, I was unemployed and didn't know what to do with myself. So I said, well, I guess I'll become a teacher. That's what I'm trained to do. So I did that for a few years and it just wasn't the right fit, and coupled with my injuries, and I didn't realize I was suffering from post-traumatic stress and a whole host of other things kind of unwound. And it was probably a blessing, because had they not unwound and had I not had this kind of break and I left my career and I was kind of a disaster for a few years, I wouldn't be here talking to you. I wouldn't be affecting the lives of other veterans, because I didn't really hit rock bottom. I didn't really understand myself, and that forced me to do that. So I'm really thankful for that experience, and I'm really thankful for being injured and having to deal with my shit. So that's me in a nutshell. Now, what I do is I help, I help veterans and members of the military get leaner, fitter, and harder to kill.
I love how you phrase that, get harder to kill, because you think about like, okay, let's build up this fortress, and now you can't bomb me, you can't shoot me, whatever. They got all this stuff, but there's other stuff that is involved there too. Like, you got to be fit, physically fit, mentally fit. All these things are going to make you harder to kill. And it's a really cool thing. And I think just going back just for a second to your time as a reservist, I was in the National Guard, which is similar to what you were experiencing. And we have, reserves as well, but the thing that I noticed, and I don't know if you noticed this as well, is the people who were not full-time active duty soldiers who were deploying usually had way more skills than whatever their military job was. So like you and I were both infantry. So we were trained on infantry tactics and all that kind of stuff. And that was great. We obviously needed to be trained in that. But the unit I deployed with was filled with people from all different walks of life. We had police officers, we had EMTs, we had mechanics, I was an accountant. Like we had everything. So like, so when something came up and like there's something wrong with one of our trucks, one of our mechanics was like the first one to come in and diagnose it before the actual Army mechanic came in and,
right.
and like was able to order, like he was able to tell him like what parts they needed to order before. So it kind of like, I thought was actually an asset to have sure. people sure. in that capacity, because you're able to do things so much quicker and so much more efficiently when you have that skill set hanging around in your unit. And we had people from like all sorts of different walks of life. And there's one guy who was a barber, and so we didn't have to go to the Afghan barber that was on base. And so yeah. we could like go to him, so we didn't have to risk like getting our throats slit or whatever.
Just the little things you have to worry about when you're in country at war, like
you just start to appreciate. You appreciate those little
things. You
gonna
stab me?
Yeah, right. Like it's like, oh, I'll give you a shave with a straight blade. No, the hell you're not. Oh man. So you've made it your mission to help other veterans lose weight, get more fit, get harder to kill. I know a lot of veterans pack on a few pounds after leaving the military. Myself included, right? I mean, so what prompted you to get out on this mission? Your own experiences, obviously, you were talking a little bit about that. Was that the primary driver? Or were you seeing other people having the same issue?
Oh yeah, man. It was all about me. It was all me. like I said earlier, I hurt my back and my knee when I was deployed. It wasn't catastrophic. It wasn't like I was knee deep in grenade pins fighting off the Taliban. It was just, I blew up my back, a few herniations, and then my knee just got, I fell off a wall and shit happens.
Yeah.
But what I realized is like later on, because I was having so much trouble getting back to normal. I was constantly in pain. It was just bringing me down, 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 down. And I just kept on sucking it up, taking more pills, sucking it up, taking more pills. And then I'd go to the gym. I'd stay, I trained, but it wasn't working. I was getting fatter. I was in more pain. I'd have days, sometimes weeks, where I couldn't go into work because I was just in too much pain. I was stuck in bed. And it was after one of those big back lockups, I said, I got to change something, man. This is not working. I have a kid. I have two now, but at that point I had one. And I remember staring up at the ceiling. My wife's helping me go to the washroom. I can't do anything. I can't be a husband. I can't be a good employee. I can't do anything. I can't be a good dad. So I said, I got to fix something. I can't live the rest of my life like this. I was 35 at the time. So I just made the decision to change. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just dissolved my ego at that point. Went to go find who's my trainer, who I got 6 years ago. Is still my trainer to this day. And we just started working on the basics. And I realized I was crazy weak. I was insanely weak. I thought, like Army strong. I could run. I'm tall, right? So running was always a easy thing for me. push-ups, pull-ups. I was infantry fit. I could ruck march for days. No problem. I was a pack mule. So in my mind, I'm good to go. But then I got kicked out of the military for not being fit. And I was like, that sucks. And then I just couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. I couldn't play sports. I couldn't play hockey. Couldn't take care of it. And so all these things compounded. And I said, okay, I'm clearly doing something wrong. And so the Costanza effect, I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan, but if everything I'm doing is wrong, then everything opposite must be right. So I just adopted the Costanza principle at that point.
And I love it.
Yeah. I just started doing everything opposite and reading. And I was always involved in fitness. I was always like the PT guy at my unit, more or less. And I just started putting together a plan with my coach. And I started reading. I started reading books by Kelly Starrett, The Supple Leopard. Started realizing, oh my God, I could have fixed everything that was wrong with me, or at least prevented it as best as possible, had I known all of this. And so once I learned that, I started writing my book, which was The Nimble Warrior. And that was during like the darkest moments of my life. I was in my basement. I didn't know what to do, but I knew I had to do something. So I started writing, and I always liked to write. And it came about because I did a seminar with some troops, because my buddy was, I don't know if he was worried about me, but he definitely, he's like, hey, why don't you come do a seminar at my unit, man? I was like, okay, cool. So I'm really thankful for that. So I talked to his troops. I said, look, I don't want you guys to be like me. You can prevent things like knee injuries and back injuries with some really simple stuff that I learned over the last few years. So do this. And then I got the after action report, and they said, man, they loved it. So I said, okay, I'm going to put together a PDF with like 4 or 5 pages on how to do stuff. And that turned into an 80-page book. So that was kind of like how I got started in this, because I just wanted to help buddy. I just said, I was just giving it away for free. Here, take this. And then it just kind of spiraled. More people saw that I was doing this stuff. Some guys reached out and said, hey, I want you to train me to get ready for special forces selection. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. Like, I didn't do that, right? So he's like, yeah. He's like, but I trust you and let's go. So he ended up making it on the teams, and some of his other brothers came about and said like, hey, I want to get trained too. And then just started to snowball to the point where I had no choice but to kind of start a business. I was just doing it all under the table, and you know, had a book, and I didn't know how to do payment gateways or anything like that. I didn't know how to do websites. I didn't know anything. So it just turned into that. And it was just one of those things that by osmosis, just kind of falling bass backwards, as my dad always says, into something. And then you just turn it into something. And that was really how I got started. I had no intention of starting a business, no intention of being involved with veterans. I just started realizing that there was a big gap there. There was nobody serving that particular group of, in particular, men. And I just wanted to kind of fix that and just share my knowledge. And that's the long and short of it.
Yeah. And it's got to be really difficult. And I'm going to get deep here on this one. It's got to be really difficult for a Canadian to not be able to play hockey.
Dude. You know, it's, I mean,
you
it's
guys
one of those
are like
things,
born
man.
With skates, right?
It was just like, yeah. Hockey is by far one of the hardest sports on the body.
Oh yeah.
Because sure. I don't know if you play hockey.
I used to.
Okay, yeah. So
yeah,
it's the amount of sweat that comes off of you after, it's insane. You only realize when you get older, because when you're a kid, you're sweaty. It doesn't matter, you know, teenager, right. Whatever, you're sweaty. Like, just that's just hockey. But then when you finish just a pickup game, which is all I play now. Actually, I haven't even put on skates this year, which is like, it's heresy. I know. I haven't even put on skates this year.
We're going to let you get out of the country first before this episode gets released, because the authority is going to be knocking on your door.
Please do. I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, I got like 2 more games left in my season, which I'm a spare. I haven't gone once, and I'm really embarrassed about that. But anyways, that's a whole other podcast. The amount of sweat after a hockey game in your gear, it's like going into the sauna, and you're really only on the ice. Like, our games are like 40 minutes. You're really only, if you're on the ice for 10 minutes, that's a lot.
Right.
Right. If you're on the ice for a quarter of the game, maybe it's not enough spares. That's a lot. But in that 10 minutes, so many guys have heart attacks. I shouldn't be laughing, but it's so hard on the body. Just the, you know, the intensity. I mean, we're not even playing contact, right? We're skating, having a good time. It's a great workout, but it's really hard on the back, because you're always in that crouch position. You know, taking slap shots and stuff like that, you're always rotating. And so you have to be healthy. You have to have good tissue mobility. It's part and parcel of getting older. You have to maintain it a lot better if you want to do the things that you love. So that was just part of why I wanted to get better personally, but also why I want to help other veterans too, because I just want them to thrive and enjoy the things that they can enjoy.
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of things, and I'm picking on hockey because it's, you know, just kind of poking fun at the Canadian on the show here, and I'm the host, so I can do whatever the hell I want. So, but I mean, there's other things too. I mean, there's all sorts of things that people just stop doing because they can't physically do it anymore, mm-hmm. because they just let their body deteriorate, and, you know, maybe an injury that they didn't follow up on and get the care that they needed. You know, it could be anything. Sport. I mean, it could be as, you know, golf is not like a super high impact sport, but there's a lot of twisting and motion and things like that. And that's something that I used to love doing. And I had a back neck injuries, and like, it's just hard for me to swing a club without hating myself after doing it, you know? So it's like stuff like that is like the reason why you want to go out and try to fix these things. And like you said, the Costanza effect, if everything you're doing is wrong, like do the opposite and maybe that'll be right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of people out there who, like I said earlier, they get out of the military, they let their PT kind of slip and they start just gaining weight. Right. And I think I saw on your website, I was doing a little look up before we started recording here, that obesity in the veteran population is higher than like the average, you know, in their peer groups. Why do you think that is? Why? I mean, from a group of people that were so in shape while they were serving in the military, theoretically, obviously there's some people who let it slip in the military too, but yeah. how do you just let it slip that quickly when you get out?
Right. Well, the research is pointing out a few things. So that study showed that veterans are about 9% greater, I guess, quantity of veterans versus the peer group in just the civvy population that are obese. So that puts it close to 50% of veterans are overweight or obese. That means a BMI of over 25. And then why? There are a lot of compounding variables. Injury is one of the biggest ones. You're in pain, so you don't right. exercise. Post-traumatic stress, you don't want to go out of your house. They're compounding factors. And the way I see it is, yeah, the injury thing, if you can't move well, your likelihood of being obese is really high. So you need to address that right off the bat and then understand that you got to pick your hard. If you're not moving because you're in pain, I get it. I've been there. But if you continue to not move because you're in pain, it's going to get worse than if you do move. And so you can sit at home and continually get worse and worse and worse and be in more and more pain, which is hard. Or you can get up off the couch and do a lap around your block, which is painful. It's hard, but which one's harder for you? And that's the one that's life. You're going to have to weigh which one is going to be more beneficial for you in the end. And which one are you going to decide to do? And so it's a lot of times it's convincing an individual that, yeah, man, like, I know this sucks. I know it hurts, but you can get better. And unfortunately, I think a lot of us, and I was guilty of this too, I just assumed that I was broken. I adopted the identity of the broken soldier. And that mindset is so toxic. It's like a cancer because it just crushes you. Because for me, I was in my early 30s and I already assumed that I was decrepit and couldn't do my job, didn't have my career anymore. It's just a downward spiral. But then I realized after talking to great people, because I started the podcast, no, man, you're not broken. You just need to reframe how you see this. Are you going to overcome, or are you going to let this define you? Because there's a lot of people that are a lot worse off than you that can get after it and keep on moving. Like the guys that are the amputees. Because right. you know, like, you can do this. And the thing is, the cool thing about pain, man, you say cool, whatever you want to call it, but the more active you are, the more positive outlook you have, the lesser the effects pain have. So, and that just, everything compounds itself. I call it the Dave Morrow downward spiral of shit is the one where you get in where it's like, I'm in pain, I'm not going to go for a workout. And then because you don't go for a workout, you're in more pain. So you don't go for a workout again. And so it's a positive feedback loop, but in the negative sense, it just keeps on compounding. You got to get into like the virtuous cycle where you go out for that walk, you get some vitamin D, you feel good. Yeah, you're in a little bit of pain, but you're like, man, that felt pretty good. Maybe I'll do it again tomorrow. And maybe I'll just go a little bit further. And then once you start doing that, then all the good hormones, then all the good feelings, and then it just compounds itself day after day after day. And that's the important part, is that the consistency has to be there. The consistency is king. And a lot of us, I think it's the ego that gets in the way, because we're a unique group of people, because we all had an experience at some point where we were fit. Basic training, whatever. You had to be fit. Most civvies don't have to ever test themselves physically. So they don't get that, oh, well, I've done something really hard before. And I think it's a double-edged sword, because you may get into your 40s and you want to start getting fit again. You realize, man, I'm 40 pounds overweight. My knees hurt. My back hurts. I'm never going to be able to run like a 5-miler and do pull-ups and push-ups again. Why bother? Because you're thinking, hey, I got to be exactly the way I was in my 20s.
Right.
No. We got to put that ego aside. You know, I always say your brain's going to write checks your body can't cash at 40 years old. You cannot go out and do what you did in your 20s after being detrained for 10, 15 years. You got to take it slow and just accept that, hey, going for a walk might be your level right now. And then maybe in a year or two, then you could start gripping and ripping barbells and doing CrossFit stuff. But we're not going to start there, man. We got to start slow, and you got to put the ego in a drawer and then just get moving.
Yeah. And to your point too, if you're sitting on the couch in pain, and that's the reason why you're not getting off the couch and going doing some sort of exercise or physical activity of some sort, at the end of the day, you're going to be in pain anyways. Mm-hmm. You might as well go do something. Like, take a look at the two activities, one sitting on the couch, the other one, going out and just walking around the neighborhood or something. You're going to be in pain at the end of the day, regardless. You might as well go do something with that time that's going to actually improve your health and overall well-being, right? If it's knee pain, and part of the knee pain is because you're carrying around too much weight, well, go do stuff to go lose some of that weight, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's going to help you. And it makes a ton of sense the way you've put it that way. And even with things like PTSD or other mental health issues, like, you don't want to leave your bed. You don't want to get out of the house. You don't want to go anywhere, right? I think it's interesting. It would be interesting to figure out whether, like, those issues are what causes obesity. So like someone who's depressed doesn't want to get out of bed and exercise, like I was just saying, or they eat the comfort food, which leads towards, you know, more weight gain. Or if the obesity is what's contributing to certain mental health issues, like they get these negative self-image and stuff like that. I could see it being like a vicious cycle where it just kind of perpetuates itself, you know?
Yeah, well, the research is there in the sense that if you have post-traumatic stress disorder, you do have a significantly greater risk of obesity.
Okay.
And, the thing that's great about America is that you guys are research machines. Any topic you want on veterans, there's research on it. And it's very clear that when you get moving and you start improving your adiposity, and you start decreasing your body fat, and you start getting fitter, mental health outcomes improve. And there's a great study that came out of the VA where they just had veterans have a 20-minute exercise session before they went into their therapy session, and their outcomes, their mental health outcomes, skyrocketed. They just really? It's a pretty simple study in the sense that they just measure like, how are you feeling today? And it's like, not good, okay, you know, like kind of like a Likert scale where you sure. can pick, you know, and then so the likelihood of feeling good down the road, months down the road, the individuals that did the 20 minutes before they went in, and it was just a little bit of structured PT, it wasn't anything crazy, they had significantly better mental health outcomes. And all studies basically point to the same direction, where if you are physically active, your chances of having long-term mental health effects, negative ones, basically get evaporated. It really comes down to, you know, the old Greek saying, anima sano in corpore sano, a healthy mind and a healthy body. You can't disassociate both. They have to be part of the whole solution. When we say holistic health, you can go to your therapist. It's important. You're talking things out. But on the other side, you need to physically be in your body and to struggle, because if not, you won't synthesize the right hormones. And for men, especially, things like testosterone, growth hormone, like these are all things that need to be working in conjunction with a healthy mind so that you're actually a healthy, thriving human being. So I think we've lost that in the conversation where we focus so much on mental health, mm-hmm. but we don't realize that one of the major components of mental health is physically being active and struggling and like lifting heavy stuff. It can eradicate a lot of the issues, but it's just getting to that point and understanding the importance of it that needs to kind of, we need to get over that hurdle first.
Yeah. And you know, when people use the phrase like holistic medicine, holistic health and all that kind of stuff, sometimes people kind of just dismiss it as some, you know, hippie kind of nonsense kind of thing. But really,
I did too.
I'm the same way until I started actually like understanding like what they're actually talking about. And it's not this, you know, hippie whatever stuff. It's really just taking a look at the big picture. Take a look at everything and see how all the pieces fit together. You know, like if you're doing a puzzle, you got a bunch of disconnected pieces and you're putting them all together and then eventually you get the whole picture, right? That's what they're talking about is looking at the whole picture. And yeah, you're right. Your physical health is directly tied to your mental health. I mean, it's a huge thing. If you never get outside, you never move heavy things, you never move your body and do anything to sweat or whatever, you're going to start to just start feeling down on yourself. And it's, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, it sucks, yeah. But that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I'm going to paraphrase here, but Jocko Willink is one of my favorite podcasters, right?
Wait, and, not me. Come on.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course. You're my favorite Army podcaster.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
He's my awesome. Favorite Navy podcaster. There was a reel that came out. I can't remember what podcast he was on. They're like, hey, what are the things you need to do to be healthy, Jocko? And you know how he is. He's very pragmatic. He's like,
yeah,
eat good food, drink water, do jujitsu, hang out with your friends. And like, he had a fifth one. I can't remember what it is, but it's essentially, it doesn't need to be complicated. Eat good food, you know, drink enough water. Oh, get outside, do jujitsu. You know, like it seems so simple. Of course it is, because we're humans, but we overcomplicate things a lot of the times. And that's unfortunate because at the end of the day, it's not overly complex. It's just, we are presented this like huge problem and all these compounding variables and, oh my God, my mental health, and I don't have tight enough connections. And I don't, but if you just simplify it and use the analogy, I would say, like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Right.
Don't try and change everything all at once. Don't try and change your nutrition and change your fitness level and change your connections with your family and change you're not going to be able to do it all at once. How it took decades to get you where you are now, where you might be a little bit confused. Well, give yourself some time, man. You're not going to fix it in a month, 2, 3, 4 months, even. Maybe it takes a year. Maybe it takes two. It's taken me about 5 years now. 5 years now. And I'm like, hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm tracking in the right direction. I feel like I've kind of got things under control. I know how to add weight. I know how to lose body fat. I know how to stay strong at my age. I know when to call it quits. I know when to push a little harder. But that's taken like 5 years of my life to figure this out. It's not just an overnight thing. And I think we're so used to just quick gratification.
Right.
Because it's like, hey, but I worked out this week. Cool. Just keep on doing it, man. Like, just keep on going.
Do more of that. Exactly.
Yeah. Do more of that. Exactly.
You know, yeah, we have that, the on-demand Amazon delivery kind of thing, like where you order something, 8 o'clock in the morning, and by noon it's on your doorstep, and it's like, you just have that instant gratification. It's like, okay, well, I went to the gym this week and I still weigh the same amount, or maybe I even gained some weight or whatever over the course of the week. Like that happens too. But like, over time, you keep doing the right thing, you're gonna start to see the results that you're looking for. You're gonna start moving in the right direction. But we are creatures of habit, and we find our comfort zone. We do the things that we're comfortable with. Yeah. But what got us to where we are is not gonna get us to where we want to be as far as our physical health or mental health, anything really. I mean, you know, if we wanna be someplace else other than where we're at right now, we gotta do something different. Otherwise, it's just insanity thinking that we're going to do the same thing over and over again and just not and just have some sort of different result come up. Like, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? It's fascinating dealing with human beings on a regular basis. You know, I've dealt with, obviously, troops. I've been a troop. I've dealt with high school age boys when I taught at the high school I was at. And I've obviously worked with grown men now. And human beings are interesting creatures. You can know logically what you're doing is not helping you. You know that all your habits are causing you discomfort, causing you pain, causing you poor health. But yet when it's like, all right, time to start working on it, you go, and you hesitate, you pause. And trying to figure that out as a coach, right, is part of my job. Well, why are you hesitating? For me, it's a no-brainer. But why is it for me a no-brainer? But then I have to think back. Well, there was a time where I thought I was doing everything right. So how do I bring that into my coaching practice and make sure that you can start unlocking this hidden resource of motivation? Because that's what it is. It's the fear of getting started and failing that is overriding your need to actually get out and do something that's going to be good for you. It's right. just this fear. There's fear that if I get started, I might fail. If I get started, I might fail, and then I'm going to be an embarrassment. Well, to who? To you? To your kids? Nobody's going to think you're a failure, man. It's just trying to get over that is a really hard part of being human, because although we want to change, status quo is so much more comfortable than being in that chaotic, well, I don't know exactly what I need to do for training. I might hurt myself. I might have a setback. Yes, those things all will happen, but they also all will happen if you don't do anything. So like you said earlier, you might as well just pick your heart and do the one that's actually going to benefit you long-term than the one that for sure is not going to get you anywhere, which is what you're doing right now.
Right. You're absolutely guaranteed 100% without a doubt. You're going to fail if you don't start.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You're going to fail without a doubt. So if you're worried about failing, like the one guaranteed way to set yourself up for success is to actually start and try to do something, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't go 100% the way you thought it was going to be. Maybe it's harder than you thought. Okay, cool. Then maybe take a step back and adjust and figure out what your limitations are. Maybe that back injury really was worse than you thought it was. And okay, well, you can't keep pushing that hard because you're going to really screw up your back, and maybe you need to do something else. Okay, well then do something else. But at least you figured that out at that point. But if you never even start and never even try, you're not even going to give yourself a chance to figure that stuff out. So you're dead in the water right there. I mean, you have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, there's different stages, right, of an individual being ready to change. And it comes down to just if you're not even aware of your problem, then it takes a lot of convincing. And that whole analogy, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, is really important at that point. Because if an individual is not ready to make the change and not ready to take the next step, it's hard to convince somebody that, hey, man, you really need to lose 30 pounds. If they're like, no, I don't. Okay, you're stuck now. All right, I guess you don't. So it's the individual that is ready for that change, where typically they have either an event in their lives where they might have a friend or a family member that passed away, maybe from diabetes or something that could have been prevented, or they realize, especially guys kind of our age, right, in our 40s and maybe even to your 50s, but especially in the late 30s, 40s, a lot of us have kids. And that was just a switch that went on for me. Oh shit, I'm responsible for these kids now for at least 18 years, but I don't just want to be here for 18 years and just exist. Right. I want to be able to kick ass and take names. And I want them to be able to say, hey, dad is out on the field with us running around. And then long-term, I want to be able to do it with my grandkids, assuming that I have grandkids. That long-term thinking requires me to do a ton of work over and above what I do professionally, so that I can stay fit and healthy. I want to be able to run. I want to be able to jump. I want to be able to do all these things. Well, I got to put the work in now. But for some, that's such an insurmountable amount of work that it's just easier just to not start. And that's where, even if they do want to make a change, it's again, that fear of starting and trying so hard to get to a goal and then not being successful is already too devastating, because it's going to expose some stuff about who they are deep down inside that some people just aren't ready to acknowledge and to find out. And it's a journey. It's just part of being human. And if you're willing to accept it, then man, the sky's the limit and you can achieve things that you never thought were possible, but you just got to take that first step.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for the longest time, I was this person that we're describing who was just like, it hurts too much. I'm just not going to do it. And I did. I was gaining weight. I'm still working to get some of that weight off from back down to where I was. And earlier this year, I went to the doctor and I was like, look, I got neck pain. I got back pain. I got to figure out what's going on. And they did all sorts of tests, all these different things. And, you know, there's disc bulging and all the time, you know, carrying all the weight, the rucks and all that kind of stuff. A couple of injuries that I had while I was in the military just are now getting to the point where it's just, it's really hard for me to do it. It's arthritis. There's, you know, I'm 41 years old. And they told me I had arthritis. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like that's stupid.
It gets issued from the quartermaster, but essentially it's like, hey, yeah, you're in your exactly. here you go. Yeah. 15 years. Like what I need this for. Don't worry
about it. You'll need it at some point. Yeah. But I was like, you know what? I can't just continue doing what I'm doing, just not exercising and continuing to get overweight, because this isn't going to get any better. And so, yeah, I'm back at the gym. I'm exercising and I'm doing it in a smart way. I'm not going the way I was going when I was 20 or 25 or whatever. I'm doing it the way that I can to the extent that I can. And, you know, I'll work back up to where I can get to. And it's not going to be to the point where I was, you know, 20 years old and, you know, lifting a car over my head or something stupid like that. You know, like I'm never going to be that way again, but I can get better and I can always be better than I was the day before and just keep working to get that way. And that's, I think the goal, right, is to just keep pushing forward and keep trying to get better.
Absolutely. Yeah. The concept of 1% better every day.
Yeah.
Some people will roll their eyes, but what does that effectively mean? It means essentially, if you're committing to being a better human being, being fitter, you got to do something that's slightly uncomfortable in the sense that you may not want to get up and go for your walk, or you may not want to go for the walk, period. You may not want to do anything, but if you consistently do your 20 minutes of activity a day, which is essentially what all human beings need, the bare minimum effective dose is 20 minutes of activity. I'm not talking about going to do deadlifts, but going for a walk is activity, low grade activity, but 88% of us don't do it. You know, if you did that for a month, 30 days straight, 20 minutes going for a walk, guarantee your body changes. You lose weight, you feel better, rain or shine. Every time you do it, you're 1% better. That's just the way it is.
Right.
And just those simple habit changes can totally reframe somebody's mindset because they realize, oh, I've been making this super hard for myself. I don't have to go for a run. I don't have to go lift weights. Mm-mm. If your goal is just to be healthy, then just do what nobody else is doing. You'll be in the top 12% of North Americans if you just go for a walk every day for 20 minutes. That's crazy. You're like an elite athlete at that point compared to everybody else, you know? Right. So you do that for a year, two, three. The comparison between who you would be and who you and who you are, like the curve just goes exponential at that point for health and longevity. So that's all it takes, is just 20 minutes a day.
And then there's the people who just kind of come up with the excuse. It's like, well, I don't have time for that. And it's like, if you normally wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready for work or school, mm-hmm. or whatever it is that you're doing, you get up at six. Okay. Well, now set your alarm for 5:30. Mm-hmm. Boom. You got the time. I just found the time for you. You know, it's easy.
Like time is so it's almost a laughable excuse.
Right.
Oh, dude, I don't have time. I'm super busy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So there's no point in your day that you just have 20 minutes just lying around. You right. don't go on YouTube, you know, you don't watch any TV. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You don't scroll on your phone for 30, 40 minutes. Cause I'm pretty sure you do. You don't have a lunch hour. You don't have any of that.
Right.
That's crazy. You must be the most busy man on the planet. But then even if you are the busiest man on the planet, why wouldn't you prioritize your health? And that's where you see the discrepancy between like the high performers and those that are not really performing. The high performers understand, if I wanted to work at peak capacity and I want to be able to make deals and I want to be able to run stuff, and well, they prioritize their fitness and their nutrition and everything, because yeah. all their cells need to be working for them, not against them. So I just did a series on the podcast, Fit to Fight. And I just took a bunch of veterans that I know well and that are extremely fit and then are extremely busy professionally. And they always find time to train. Like one of them just goes at the lunch hour and does like 100 reps of everything for 40 minutes and then goes back to work. He's an executive at Google. Like you can do it. It's not, there's no excuse. They just go faster. They just do it. I know I need to. So let's just grip and rip, go yeah. in, out and done. And so there's always the time. The time is not the excuse. It's the internal motivation that's always the big holdback. So yeah, if you need time, man, we can find time.
You can always write me an email time.
Like, bro, I don't know where to find time. Oh, we'll find some.
We'll find
exactly. some for you. Yeah.
You know what? As a matter of fact, you could, for the listeners, you could find it yourself. Look at your phone in your settings somewhere. I don't know where it is specifically, on Android versus iPhone or whatever. Somewhere in your phone, it'll tell you how much time you use mm-hmm. on each app throughout the day.
Screen time on the iPhone.
Yeah, there you go. So look at that. And when you're looking at Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is that you're looking at, TikTok, whatever, and you take a look at that time, whatever that time is, you're like, okay, instead of doing this stupid crap that I don't need to be doing, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to just go walk around the neighborhood or walk around my office or something. Yeah. Just get outside and go do something.
And I got even like a cheat or a hack, if you may. You can be on Facebook and go for a walk too. I know it's not, I mean, assuming there's no traffic,
right?
If you really need to be on your phone that badly, you can still scroll, just walk. It's, or even like worst case scenario, you get a treadmill in your house and like go on your phone. If you're that much of an addict, cool, but at least get the PT in while you're doing the thing that's, you know, your habit, your must do, which is being on your phone. It's as simple as that. It's really as simple as that.
There was someone at the gym the other day. They had a tablet, like an iPad or something, and it was on the exercise bike, and they had it in front of them, and they were doing that. They were like scrolling through Facebook, mm-hmm. just like going up and up and up, just scrolling. I was like, okay, well, you know what? You're doing something still while you're doing that.
Yeah.
So that hack works too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. certainly an easy way to fix that, is just
get it in.
Do both. I mean, if you're the type of person who can't chew gum and walk at the same time, then maybe don't do that. But
yeah, I'm not advocating going for walks on busy streets with your head down and your phone. Please don't do that.
No, definitely don't do that.
There's been too many accidents, like horrific. Well, yeah, no, please don't do that. But
you definitely don't ride your bike when you do that too. Like that would be terrible.
In my neighborhood in the summertime, I don't know how these, what do I call them? I'm a millennial. So what's below them? Gen Zs. They're on their they're not skateboards. I don't know. They're on different kinds of boards than I had when I was a kid. And they're on a phone and they're like navigating, and dude, really? Bikes, you name it. I can't picture a world where I would be on my phone, on a bike, on a city street. That just doesn't compute for me. It's just this whole like hard to kill mentality.
Yeah. Oh, that makes you easy to kill.
Yeah.
Like you're dead. Like one ride, you do that once and you're gone. That's it.
Yeah.
This will be the last conversation.
You really don't perceive any threat right now. There's no threat to you. That you live in a world where there is 100% safety, where everybody who's driving their car is looking out for you.
Yeah.
Bro, if you're on your phone, what do you think half the people are doing in the cars, man? On their phones too.
I don't trust people that much to get out there and say, oh yeah, you know what? That driver over there, he's probably got my best interest in mind.
No way.
Like that's insanity to me. And I think we just live in a culture and a society that like actual threats to people's lives are not as common as they think they are. I don't know.
Well, that's partly It's partly why I came up with the hard to kill mantra or slogan. It's not anything new. There's other guys that use it. Tim Kennedy, CrossFit. And the reason why I came up with it was I was just on a run. I just got fired from a job and I was just fucking pissed. And I remember I was like, I'm just going to run until I feel better. It's, I went out for, I think it was like 15K or something like that. And then as I was running, I was, why do I do this? Why do it when I get upset? I just go hard and I suffer. And I realized it's partly because I think, well, what happens if I have to run this distance in order to save my family? What happens if I need to lift or pull something in order to get it off my kid? Or, and even before I had kids, I would say, well, if I don't get to this pole in the next 3 seconds when I'm sprinting, like everybody dies. And I thought I was crazy. I thought I was insane. I said, I can't say this out loud. I'm going to get locked up. But then I heard Joe Rogan say the same thing too on his podcast. And then it all made sense. I was like, oh, okay. I'm not nuts. This is just how some guys are programmed. So I just like training hard. And the whole idea of like hard to kill came about from that. But also there's just not a lot of threats. Right. And right. I don't want, but don't get me wrong. I don't want to feel threatened when I leave my house. I'm in a very quiet suburb. I'm okay with that. I've had mortar rounds go over my head and freaking rounds go by me. I don't want that anymore. I don't want to have that constant fear, but I do like to impose some amount of controlled stress by training, by doing stuff that's hard. Because if not, I think that just creates anxiety because we're programmed to identify threats all the time. That's just how we evolve. And when there's no threats, our central nervous system just starts perceiving threats that aren't really there.
Right.
And then you start developing all these anxieties and stresses that shouldn't be because your central nervous system is just out of control. And hence the reason why, part of what I preach is get out, do some exercise, but then also struggle, like go lift some heavy shit.
Right.
Because it allows your central nervous system to realize, oh, okay, I've done the hard stuff and there's nothing around me that I really have to worry about. What that guy over there texting on his phone, not a threat. You know, it allows you to, because after a heavy set of deadlifts, the world is zen, man. There's nothing else that can bother you.
Yeah. And the reality is that, you know, the day to day, you're not facing mortar rounds and bullets whizzing by your head and stuff like that day to day. That's not happening. But in the future, at some point, there could be a dangerous situation that you do find yourself in. And I'm not talking about World War III breaking out, although that is a possibility.
Very well happen by the time this podcast is published. So,
so knock on wood. We'll see. Knock on wood. Hopefully, I am not jinxing this. If I am, really I take full responsibility and I will be the first one to sign up to go.
I'm coming to America, by the way, if this does happen. I'm coming to America. You guys have a lot more guns than us.
So yes, we do. Yes. You can come down here to Arizona. We have plenty. But yeah, I mean, there could be just a one-off thing. It could be just a random guy walking into, a store or something like that. And that's happened before. But without training, without being able to be aware of threats and the situations going around you, you're going to be much easier to kill. You know, if you're not paying attention to your surroundings, that you're going to become the first target because it's like, oh, look, there's that schmuck over there who doesn't know what's going on. And yeah, I'm going to go after that guy, as mm-hmm. opposed to somebody who saw the threat walking into the door and went and got his family out of there and moved on. I'm not saying that this is like a day-to-day occurrence that's going to happen all the time. It may never happen ever in your lifetime. But it may happen once, and once may be all that it takes for something bad to get you. So mm-hmm. yeah, train to be hard to kill. So talking about that, let's talk about your podcast. I was a guest on that, like I mentioned earlier, a few weeks ago. So definitely listeners, go check out that episode and subscribe to the show, but tell the listeners what they can expect if they check out the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great to have you on. That's the power of Instagram and being involved in the coalition, the podcast coalition. The
podcast coalition. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a cheesy thing that we came up with, but it works. I mean, there's what, maybe 10, 15 or so of us in the group or so, somewhere around there. I don't know. I don't keep track of the numbers, but yeah, it's really great because we can mm-hmm. we kind of feed off each other, you know, help each other out and have cool guests on the show like we're doing today. So
yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's cool that once I started branching out, and I recognize that as one of my strengths is just being able to reach out and network. So I try to leverage it as much as possible. I'm not great at organizing in the sense that I'm not great at procedural stuff, like business stuff, like, oh, I got to mm-hmm. do this again. Like I got to do the books. So when it comes to the actual like big picture stuff and like reaching out and connecting and creating bonds, I love, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I get energy by, you know, talking with folks like yourself and other groups that, you know, we've started, you know, just on Instagram, stuff like that. I love it. And just the ability to branch out, and the podcast is just that medium, that vehicle to be able to reach out and talk to so many awesome people in the health and fitness space. And I created the podcast kind of around the same time where I was creating the book, partly because I needed free therapy, but also I didn't know what else to do. I was really like, my studio is my basement. So I'm in my basement right now. And my buddy had started one a few years earlier, and I just thought it was for nerds. He started this podcast for rugby coaches. All right. And I listened to it. I just thought, dude, all right, you do your podcast stuff. But then he interviewed Kelly Starrett, who I mentioned earlier, who wrote the book, The Supple Leopard. And I was reading his book and it was helping me out a lot. And I'm like, wait, hold on a sec. He's a New York Times bestselling author. How are you talking to him on your podcast? He said, I just emailed him. What? He's right. Like, yeah, I just had a conversation with him. I'm like, did you pay him? He's like, no. And then the light went off. I was like, oh my God, I could talk to all these people just by sending him an email. They seem famous to me, but like, let's be honest. A guy like Kelly Starrett, who has hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram, is not Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's famous. You know, these influencers, they're famous to, you know, people that follow them. And so right. Then that kind of the light went on there too. It was like, oh, so wait, I could talk to him. And then I just started sending out emails and talking to individuals and just being able to bring a broader sense of what fitness and health is to the veteran community, because that was my goal, to try and be able to be a voice of, you know, health, fitness, reason, logic, whatever you want to call it, in a niche that isn't really well served. I mean, there's a lot of veteran podcasts out there. There's a lot of health podcasts out there, but to be specific for the veteran and military individual, that really wasn't there. So I wanted to bring my science background that I had. I wanted to bring my teaching background and all everything I've learned from fitness and health to the community. And so I'm 4 years in now. I had some amazing guests, you included. And I try to pull the biggest or the best individuals in their field, whether it's, you know, cardiac surgeons, fasting, weight training, whatever it may be, mental health. I try to bring them onto the podcast to have their voices heard within our community as much as possible, so that individuals can get healthy and fit basically for $0. All it costs them is a bit of time. And right. You could, with 150 episodes I've done, you could put together a badass protocol for yourself. And within a year, you'll be probably in the best shape of your life. And that's been the intent since the start.
Yeah, it's great. And I love the thing that you were talking about with podcasting, is how it opens up doors to be able to talk to people who you previously would have probably no business talking to, no reason to reach out to these people. And, you know, I've had people on my podcast, and afterwards I was like, holy crap, I can't believe I just had an episode with this person. I didn't have to pay him anything or anything. Like they came on, they were willing to share their stories. And you mentioned Jocko. I haven't had Jocko on the podcast, although that would be awesome.
Yet. When you do, hook me up. Hook me up.
Yes, it'll be in the contract. It'll have to be done that way. But
Dave, you're like, what's this Dave Morrow? Don't worry about it, Jocko.
He's a good guy. If you can get past the accent, he's fine. He checks out. but yeah, I mean, I've had people Mama Lee is Mark Lee's mom. He mentions him on the Jocko podcast all the time. She's been on his podcast. I've had her on my podcast. She actually lives in my town, which was really cool. We met just by chance at some event that we both happened to be at. And I was like, would you want to be on the show? And she's like, yeah, sure. No problem. So we did it. I was like, holy crap. Like I've heard about this lady for years, like listening to the Jocko podcast. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even realize she lived in my town. So it was like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, it opens up so many doors and you get to talk to so many people, and you're right. It's like therapy. Like you just get to talking to people, and it just, I don't know, like afterwards you kind of just feel good about the conversation and everything. It's kind of cool. It's actually surprising for me, 'cause I'm a total introvert. Like I don't go out into big crowds and get energy from that, those crowds. It's like, sometimes I come back from big crowded events or things that, where there's lots of people, and I'm like, I just need to like hide away for like a couple of days to like regain my energy. You know, it's like the complete opposite. But like doing the podcast, it's for some reason it just works for me. And I like having this conversation right now, I'm like, this is awesome, you know. And yeah, so it's really a cool thing. So yeah, for any of the listeners out there on the fence about starting a podcast and think it's just for nerds, you know,
it's a cool kid thing now.
It's definitely the cool thing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're not doing it, then maybe you're not the cool kid. So I guess that's what we got.
Yeah.
But, anyways, David, man, it's been awesome speaking with you today. I think this is, definitely a much needed conversation. As much as the mental health thing is needed to be discussed, I think the physical health is needed as well. And, you know, I think it's awesome what you're doing. So thank you for taking the time to join me on the show and share your information. Really has been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. Yeah, it's been a real hoot. I love being able to hop on and share what little I've learned over the last few years, but to also do it down south, which when I say down south, I don't mean Arizona. I mean the United States of America, with my brothers and sisters down there. It's always a real hoop. But I'll be going down to Vegas actually in November for the Military Influencer Conference, which is like the best conference on the planet. Last year was just like.
I know. So, I didn't get to go last year, but I'm planning on going this year. I have a couple schedule things that might kind of screw things up. So I definitely want to be there. I have it on the calendar.
But we're booked up. I've already got everything booked. We got the hotel booked. We're good. We just need flights. We're already good to go. So we're bringing more Canadians too. We got like a present showing up.
Oh gosh.
So it's gonna be maple syrup. And
it's gonna be flowing.
Like Tim Hortons, double doubles. We're gonna bring some hockey sticks. We're gonna bring the heat. Bring the Canadian heat. It'll be great.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, I'm really hoping to be able to get to it. And yeah, if I'm there, we are definitely hooking up and maybe do another episode or something there. And
of course.
That'd be awesome. So cool. Awesome. Well, thanks again for taking the time to join me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.